The reading is taken from Luke, chapter 12, verses 13 to 21. It can be found in the Church Bible on page 1045. The Parable of the Rich Fool. Someone in the crowd said to him, "Teacher, tell my brother to divide the inheritance with me." Jesus replied, "Man, who appointed me a judge or an arbiter between you?" Then he said to them, "Watch out. Be on your guard against all kinds of greed. Life does not consist in an abundance of possessions." And he told them this parable. The ground of a certain rich man yielded an abundant harvest. He thought to himself, "What shall I do? I have no place to store my crops." Then he said, "This is what I'll do. I will tear down my barns and build bigger ones, and there I will store my surplus grain. And I will say to myself, 'You have plenty of grain laid up for many years. Take life easy. Eat, drink, and be merry.'" But God said to him, "You fool, this very night your life will be demanded from you. Then who will get what you have prepared for yourself? This is how it will be with whoever stores up things for themselves, but is not rich towards God." This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God.
Well, I may have misjudged this. Good evening. I have lived in Reigate for about 5 years now. So I'm getting to that stage where when I come back from holiday, I feel like I'm coming home. Do you get that? So, who's lived here? Who's moved here in the last sort of 5 to 10 years? Okay, so you sort of get what I'm talking about? You understand that feeling of driving to Reigate and thinking, this isn't home, the other place is home, and now I'm in that place. I am one of you. Here are some things that I love about Reigate. Obviously, the High Street, beautifully refurbished almost every week, and now they've got rid of that dreadful homeware shop. I think we're all feeling a lot happier. The park, and of course the beautiful school, which my son attends, there as well. The coffee shops. I have counted 13 coffee shops. Dedicated coffee shops. There are other Carluccio's and Valentino's now and others that also serve coffee, but by the strictest sort of criteria, I've counted 13 that are basically coffee shops, so you may be familiar with some of these here. I love the hill. Did you know Reigate Hill has a fort? I didn't know there was a fort. I would have moved there earlier. The church. I work in a town where Christianity is in serious decline. I live in Reigate, but I work in Luton, and that's quite a commute. You're just working it out in your heads. And the church there is in serious freefall. Not so here. There are loads of churches and loads of people in churches as well. The sports facilities are fantastic here, although sadly they've been under attack recently. The shops are fantastic if you love shopping. The schools are fantastic if you love your children. The celebrities. I once saw a transaction take place in Marks and Spencer in Reigate High Street where both Shane Ritchie and Tracy the barmaid reached for the same pack of asparagus. It was like being in Hollywood. It was the entire staff of the Queen Vic at the time, actually. And of course, the coffee shops. Let's not forget coffee shops. There are a number more, including three there that have opened in the last 12 months. Reigate is, according to the Sunday Times, the 11th best place to live in the whole of England, putting it alongside places like Windsor and Kensington and Henley-on-Thames. And Epsom, sir. Yes. Okay. I'm aware not everyone lives in Reigate, but if you live here, you're insulated from many of the worst social problems in the UK. And some of your biggest worries will include, infrequent recycling collection and also the dreadful noise after 11 o'clock taking place in Priory Park when there's some sort of party on there. And if you live in the surrounding areas, Redhill, Merstham, Dorking, you're also still in a sort of middle-class commuter belt full of good schools, low crime, open spaces. This is a place of plenty. What's interesting is when you ask other people to describe Reigate. Are you ready for this? This may hurt. So using the social network Twitter, I did a little survey. What are the first words that come to mind when you think of Reigate? And it seems to have disappeared. Oh, yes, because it's coming up later. Here we go. I'm going to read them to you instead. Expensive. Commuter. Middle class. Wealthy. Yummy mummy. Full of churches. Boring, nice, families, and this one's really going to hurt, smug. That's maybe how other people view Reigate. So, being very aware of where we are right now, let us look at this story from Luke's Gospel. All this section gives us to go on in terms of where they are right now is Jesus was teaching in a certain place, it says in chapter 11. And so I'm guessing that's Luke's forgotten. He was told at some point where they were, but he's forgotten. So with a huge amount of artistic license, we're going to presume this conversation takes place in Reigate. So, first of all, if we look at the start of chapter 12, we'll see that a crowd of many thousands had gathered so that they were trampling on one another. So as the Gospel of Luke goes on, we see this thing happening where bigger and bigger crowds are starting to turn up and listen to Jesus' teaching, to the point here where he's at critical mass. He's exploded. He's now got thousands of people, mobs of people pushing to try and hear what he's got to say. And this is when he chooses to tell this story. So, someone in the crowd spoke to Jesus, and he said, "Teacher, tell my brother to divide the family property with me." So Jesus is going to now tell a parable in response to the arrival of this man who wishes to settle a dispute with his brother. Jesus was a rabbi, and often as a leader of the Jewish community, other rabbis would serve as mediators in these sorts of disputes. We don't know the details of the conflict, but we can speculate based on how the culture worked at the time. That the brother wanted out of his family business and he wanted to go out on his own. So he's got there's a property dispute. So Jesus replies, "Friend, who made me a judge or umpire or arbiter between you?" Jesus says this because he knows the brother doesn't really want a judge or arbiter. He wants an advocate on his behalf. He said, "Teacher, tell my brother to divide the family property with me." So this is Jesus' clue that there's a danger of greed creeping in this situation. It's pretty obvious. Jesus refuses to judge between the two, but he can't resist the opportunity for a story. So in verse 15, then he said to them, "Watch out." So he doesn't answer the question. "Then he said to them, 'Watch out, be on your guard against wanting to have more and more things. Life is not made up of how much a person has.'" There is nothing else I will say this evening that has more power or truth or relevance than this one verse. We all know deep down that what Jesus is saying here is right. But sometimes there's a bit of a loose connection between what we know about this idea and what we do. And perhaps that's why Jesus starts with a warning. Watch out. Be on your guard. This creeps at you. Why does he address this topic as he would if he was talking about a physical danger? Why is he so worried about people accumulating stuff? Because if we think about this in a slightly less high-minded way for a moment, stuff is nice. I like shopping. Do you like shopping? I won't judge you if you say yes. I'm not trapping you. I like my Volkswagen, but I would really love to drive an Audi, at least once. I have tragically unfashionable shoes. I would like better ones. I would like cooler clothes. I have been, I confess, drooling over the Sonos music player system for some months. Anybody else know what that is? Anyone else drooling? I won't ask if anyone has them. And the thing is, I am sure on one level, if I had these things, I would be a little bit happier. So Jesus tells the man and the crowd a story. He said, "A certain rich man's land produced a good crop. He thought to himself, 'What should I do? I don't have any place to store my crops.' Then he said, 'This is what I'll do. I will tear down my storerooms and build bigger ones. I will store all my grain and my other things in them.' So this is a story about a man who has more than he needs. He harvests his crops and he finds he has so much in the harvest. He has more than he can fit in his storehouses. Way more, so much more that it's financially worth it for him to demolish the buildings he has already and go to the expense of building new storehouses. So this is a story about a man who has more than he needs and decides to upsize his property. And we shall speculate that this man is called Mr. Reigate. So, Mr. Reigate formulates his plan. And as a result of having his bigger barn, two things emerge. In verse 19, he says, "I'll say to myself, 'You have plenty of good things stored away for many years. Take life easy, eat, drink, and have a good time.'" This is his plan. So two things. First, his bigger barns make him selfish. Having more stuff makes him focus even more on his own pleasure. Notice how many times he talks about himself in this story. My crops, my storerooms, my grain, my other things, myself. He seems to have no awareness of his part in a wider community, only of himself and his desire to acquire more and to have pleasure. And secondly, his dream convinces him that more stuff will make him happy. If I just do this, then I'll be happy. If I just accumulate and store up more stuff. There is a brilliant picture book version of this stuff, of this story, which I very nearly read to you, but then realized I was in danger of offending you over again by patronizing you with a children's book. So I'm just going to tell you what happens. But in it, this character builds progressively larger barns. He doesn't just sort of stop with his barn. He then plants some more stuff, and he thinks, "Oh, I could harvest even more crops." So he builds a bigger barn, and then he builds a bigger barn than that, and a bigger barn again. And that strikes me, that story. Whenever I read that story to my kids, it always strikes me that that's the problem with stuff. Stuff alters your perspective on stuff. The more you have, the more you want. And suddenly, there's a new normal. Does that make sense? I have a friend who lives in a flat in a rough part of Essex, I have another friend who lives in a mansion. I won't tell you where it is, but he lives in a big mansion, not Reigate. And both my friends have something in common. They often tell me they are short of money. The second friend, who now lives in a mansion, also started in a flat in a rundown area. Now he has bedrooms he doesn't even go in. So what happened? As his properties got bigger, his perspective of what was normal altered. The mansion became the new normal. But here's the thing that they don't have in common. The friend in the flat is, despite genuinely having no money at all and almost no stuff, happy. The friend in the mansion is not that happy. He's fairly happy, but his life is full of stress. And a lot of the things he's stressed about are connected to maintaining his standard of life. He's certainly not more happy than the first friend. So, this man who we meet here, referred to by the, whoever it is who writes the headlines in the Bibles, the chapter titles, the rich fool. He's a selfish man made more selfish by the accumulation of more stuff. And he's convinced that more stuff will make him happier. But of course it won't. Those people that have lots of stuff testify to that fact. Here's an oft-used quote from Jim Carrey, the actor. He says, "I hope everybody could just get rich and famous and have everything they ever dreamed of so they'll know it's not the answer." Here's what God says to the rich fool. God says to him, "You foolish man, this very night I will take your life away from you. Then who will get what you have prepared for yourself?" The flaw in Mr. Reigate's plan is that life is more than skin and bones and crops and barns and stuff. He's thinking in two dimensions and the universe is in 3D. Eternity is waiting and you can't take it with you. God isn't being angry and vengeful here. He's saying, "I've looked at the clock, your time is almost up. Is this really how you wanted to spend your life? Accumulating more stuff and seeking happiness through that." Verse 21 says, "That is how it will be for anyone who stores things away for himself but is not rich in God's eyes." I think that's pretty chastening stuff to read, for me to read, in the 11th nicest place to live in England, in the midst of what is undoubtedly a materialistic consumer culture, not just in Reigate, but in this country. And it seems to me that Jesus is saying something pretty loud and clear to any of us who buys in to that culture. And I am often the chief of sinners. To any of us who's trying to build our happiness through the accumulation of stuff. Because we are more than the sum total of our stuff. You are more than the sum total of your stuff, of the things that you own. This man has got it all wrong, even though he thinks he's got it so right. And the problem is, as I see him, I see so much of myself. Because of that disconnection between what we say and what we do about materialism. And like many of you, I live in Reigate. And this is a place where many, many people are playing the rich fool's game. And I know I don't want to get sucked into it, but I often find that I have been. So these are the words that people use to describe Reigate: expensive, commuter, middle class, wealthy, yummy mummy, full of churches, boring, nice. Nice probably not meant as a in a positive sense. Families, and that word again, smug. I don't know about you, that makes me unhappy. It makes me unhappy that that's how people see this town. And I wonder whether it makes me unhappy because I know there's a ring of truth, not just about this town, but about the way I live my life. So the challenge is this: how could we redefine what Reigate means to people? Is it possible that the culture of a place could change so much that instead of being defined by those words, it could begin to be defined by others? Generous, welcoming, inclusive, happy, kind, loving, exciting. And then I included nice again because nice is not a bad thing. And we want to be a place that welcomes families, and we want to be a place that's full of churches. Of course we do. Surely the answer to how we get there starts with a community of people who live in Reigate but live differently, live according to these ideals, who start actively demonstrating they're not motivated by the accumulation of wealth and stuff or keeping up with the neighbors or building a bigger barn, or rather moving to the bigger house that they didn't need. The last thing I want to do is offend anyone by what I'm saying. And if you know me well enough, then you'll know that recently, 2 or 3 years ago, we had an extension built. So I seek not to criticize, and if I do criticize, then I'm an utter hypocrite. But I do want to point to a broken culture that's all around us in the UK, and you feel very intensely here at times in Reigate and the surrounding areas. And I simply hope that you're as challenged as I am by Jesus' words in this story. Because we are more than the sum total of our stuff. And as Christians, we're actually much more. We actually have a different kind of hope, an enduring hope to tell people about, to show other people about in the way that we live our lives. So how do we change the culture of our town? I can't hope to answer that question in a few moments. But as I leave you to think about that enormous challenge for yourself, here are just a few practical ideas about how we can begin to break the hold of materialism. We can become aware of how and where our stuff owns us. I invite you, as I've been doing, to take a look at the things you own and ask the question, what are the things here that I couldn't give up? What are the things you love just a little bit too much? One example for me is my iPhone. I am fairly convinced now Jesus probably wouldn't have one of these. It constantly distracts me. It means I'm always available and always on. It means that I'm never fully present with my family when I've got it in my pocket. I've been bathing children, and then I felt a little vibration in my pocket. I've not been able to resist it. And I would have deserved this thing landing in the bath, quite frankly. But I like it because it's shiny and it's nice and it's clever and it's top of the range. And my awareness of this demands action. So perhaps it's time for me to downsize my phone or take a break from it, at least. Because iPhones are like bombs, and the iPhone 6 is coming. And when it comes out, then I will be happy. Point two. Give radically. I was incredibly challenged recently to hear Rick and Kay Warren at the HTB Leaders Conference in London, and they've taken tithing to a whole new level. So this idea of tithing, giving 10% of your income to the church or to charity, they started by giving away 10% of their income, but they realized that that didn't actually hurt the way that they lived. They realized they weren't actually having to make many sacrifices to give away 10% of their income. So they moved to 20% to see if that hurt a bit more. And it didn't really. So a little bit later on, they moved to 30%, and then 40%, and then 50%. This year, they are looking to see if they can increase their tithe from 93% of their income to 94% of their income. And even when you're earning as much from book royalties as Rick Warren is, that means it does start to hurt. I'm challenged by the fact that Rick Warren, the pastor of the biggest church in America, drives around in a 20-year-old estate car and doesn't dress fashionably if you meet him up close. I think every time you give, you loosen the hold of materialism and consumerism in your life just a little bit more. And you say something powerful to others in the process, and you may really help others as well. And thirdly, another key to this idea of breaking the hold of materialism is to begin to practice simplicity. It's an ancient spiritual discipline. You'll see, I got into a terrible trouble recently at a monastery because I started to talk to a monk about the fact that I tried to embrace the discipline of simplicity, and he was excited, imagining that I was sleeping on a sort of stone floor with gruel for 3 meals a day. And actually, I told him that, you know, I turned my iPhone off on Sundays. but the idea of this ancient spiritual discipline is to ask yourself frequently this question. Ask this question of your life. Where should I be having a little bit less? Where should I be doing a little bit less? And actually, that's so you can ask another question, which is, what things should I be doing more of? What do I create space for by doing that? So a practical exercise would be to walk around your house with a bin bag and see if you can get rid of 10% of your stuff, the things you don't really need but you quite like. And if 10% doesn't hurt, you can go around again until you're like Rick Warren and you've given 93% of your stuff to help the aged or something. Don't do that. There's great joy in the pursuit of simplicity, because by simplifying our lives, we create more space in which God can move. And when we practice this discipline of simplicity, then we cannot fail to have others notice what we do, and those around us cannot fail to notice what we do. So these are just first steps. These are simple ideas. But the important thing is that we don't somehow live in ignorance to God's heart on these issues when we're living in a place where they are rife all around us. So may I not be like that man who comes to Jesus looking for a justification for what is essentially his greed. I leave you once more with those words of Jesus. Then he said to them, "Watch out, be on your guard against wanting to have more and more things. Life is not made up of how much a person has." Let's pray. Father God, I don't have a right to pray into anyone else's life but my own. So I pray that you will help me to respond to this challenge, that you will work in my heart so that I might become a little less materialistic, a little less owned by my stuff. And Lord, I pray that those around me would see your light in that. Amen.